Hey, if you have a Bible with you, we're always going to open up the Bible. If you have one, you can turn to Luke 5. That's where we're going to be tonight. If you don't stress it. We will have it on the screen here. You can download an app real fast. No big deal. But there's this guy who wrote this gospel, the story of Jesus' life, named Luke. And in the fifth chapter of his book is where we're going to kind of start out here tonight and in our semester. But hey, we are glad you're here. We're glad to see you. We're glad that you made it here in the trees on Wednesday night, amongst all the other things you could be doing. How many of you guys threw flaming tennis balls at some point this last week? Yeah, cool. Any people running around crazy on campus last night with Fugitive? Yeah, a few of you guys there. So we've had a great time getting to know some of you, and look forward to getting to know many of you guys more in the days to come. But what we are is a community of Christ followers, and that doesn't mean that you need to be a Christ follower to be part of this group. I was talking with a couple people this week that were like, well, I'm not actually a Christian, and I'm like, that's fine. We welcome you to journey with us because we believe in a God who is pursuing us, and we discover him in community as we journey towards him in our lives. And so we invite you, wherever you're at, to come with us on the journey of discovering about this rabbi from Israel from 2,000 years ago and how he is not just was a good man or a good teacher or a revolutionary of his time, but himself to this day is transforming our lives in our midst. So Luke chapter 5 verse 1 says, one day as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, and I'm sure I butchered that, but the people were crowded around him and listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Simon answered, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I guess I'll let down the nets. When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boats to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. Andrew's like, amen, I want to be there. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man. For he and all of his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people. So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. So if I asked you, who is someone in your life that intimidates you, who would that person be that comes to your mind? Maybe it's somebody this week that you met, like one of your professors, right? Or, you know, you got into like your desired major and suddenly realized you have a capstone course with the hardest professor in the college. And you realize, man, this is going to be a tough semester in some ways. Maybe it's that girl sitting a couple blankets away from you and you're like, I would love to talk to her after this, but she's, you know, you feel this like fear and yet this desire to engage, right? Like who here is from a small town? Right? Yeah. Who grew up, just out of curiosity, you don't have to raise your hand if you're uncomfortable for any reason, but who here grew up in a town with less than like 50,000 people? Yeah. Yeah. Quite a few of you. How many fewer than 20,000? How many fewer than 10,000? 5,000? 2,000? Hey. Oh yeah. Zach. Yeah. Over there in Alabama. 500? Yeah, Zach's still got his hand up. You win. Tig. Yeah, all right. So sometimes you show up to places like this in this moment. So some of you guys maybe moved into the dorms. How many moved into the dorms this week? Yeah, quite a few of you. That's cool. So you moved into the dorms, and there's like, what, 7,000 new people on the campus moving in? Like, that's more than, like, many of your small towns that you grew up in, maybe. And that can be intimidating. Right, there's a lot of things. Maybe you have social anxieties, and just a group as a concept is intimidating. I know that before even COVID was a thought or a thing in the world, that the university was using words like pandemics to describe the level of social anxiety and fear and depression that was permeating and ravaging much of the generation that you guys are now kind of in. It's like, hey, we've never seen anything quite like that. But we all understand, we all get the idea of feeling a sense of anxiety, a feeling of overwhelmed, a feeling of being like uncomfortable around someone else, and like, how do we respond? And here's Peter in this interaction with Jesus, and he's in one of those moments. He's in one of these moments where he really wants, he'd probably have fled if it wasn't for the fact that he's in this boat with Jesus. And so here we see this interesting story of Peter and interacting with this guy, Jesus, and what this teaches us about how this is what we think is probably Peter's first interaction with Jesus. And Peter's life would, from this interaction, forever be transformed, changed in a radical sort of way. And I want to just look at that for a few minutes tonight. So I'm going to go back through, let's work through the passage just a little bit and draw out some of the, just the cool things that we see that is going on kind of behind the scenes that maybe we don't always catch. It says, one day, as Jesus was standing at the lake of Gennesaret, the people were crowded around him and listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. Now, like any good like college student, you know, they're like multitasking, right? Like you right now as you're listening to me and kind of like, you know, doing Instagram posts and like talking with your friends about what you're doing after this guy gets done talking, right? Like, so they're kind of multitasking. They're just fishing, and they just got done fishing, and they are cleaning their nets. And there's this rabbi nearby, and he's been teaching. And so it says he got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon. We would often call him Peter later. And asked him to put out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. Now, we don't know, like, at that time, it was actually very common for a rabbi to sit and everyone else to stand. So it'd be reverse of what we do kind of culturally now. So maybe it was partially that. Probably there was something to do with amplification, right? You don't have, like, this speaker and this mic and this, like, whole sound system. So Jesus is getting out from shore, probably so that the water can actually amplify his voice. But this is what would become probably the first interaction Peter has with Jesus. Verse 4, when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Simon answered, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I'll let down the nets. So, you know, it's interesting. Peter shares his skepticism with Jesus. He's like, hey, I'm the expert here. You're the rabbi. Great teaching. Pretty cool stuff. But I'm the fisherman. I've been out all night. I know what I'm doing. Like, he shares his skepticism. I was talking with a student here just this last week at Ramapalooza or something. And he kind of told me, he's like, well, because I was asking him questions about kind of what he believes or what his background in faith is. And he said, well, I don't want to offend you. And I don't know if it's the right response, but I laughed at him. And I just like, dude, I've been doing this for like almost 20 years. Like, you're not going to offend me. I would rather you be authentic, be honest, be real with what's actually going on. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me where you're coming from. I would love to just have a conversation. And we did. We had a great conversation after he just kind of shared where he's coming from and his perspective. But here's Peter, and he's just kind of like, yeah, I don't think anything's going to happen. But I'll give it a try. And how many of you guys ever just feel like in faith, if you've journeyed with Jesus, how many feel like sometimes you're just kind of like, I don't know if anything's really going to happen, but maybe I'll just like step out anyways. Maybe I'll just, you know, nothing's going to happen if I pray. God's not going to answer that. Nothing's going to happen. But okay, all right, God, I'll go for it. Like, if I share about my faith, they're not going to be interested. It's just going to be weird and awkward for both of us. I'm not interested in doing that. Like, yeah, okay, Jesus, maybe you brought that person into my life. Like, how many times have we had moments where we're just kind of like, I often tell people, like, you can either trust the who or the what when it comes to God. And oftentimes we want God to explain the plan to us so we can really get our heads around it. And, you know, we're all, you know, you guys are all college students. At some level, you've reached a certain level of academic excellence to be here, to be going through school. And so you're used to kind of thinking analytically and critically a little bit. And so you're like, okay, give me the plan. I want to understand it. A lot of engineers around. So they're like, okay, I want to see kind of like the flow and how it works and the, you know, and God's like, well, I really want you to trust me. And if I explain the plan, you're just going to trust the logic that I explained to you. I really would rather you come to this place of like trusting the character of who I am. And how many of you ever had that in your life where you feel like the Lord's maybe led you to do something that just didn't really make always a lot of sense, but you felt like he was doing something? I was thinking like, well, what story should I tell? I have plenty of these, but I thought one that's always kind of fun to just share. But I was single after college, a few years after college. I was working for Chi Alpha, and I had gone back to Portland, Oregon to see my brother and a bunch of family. And through a series of circumstances, I'll keep the story short, but I ended up just going to this hangout with a bunch of his friends and a bunch of people from his church and different things. And we're hanging out. There's a bunch of people there. All of a sudden, this girl walks in. I just kind of casually look over like somebody's walking in the door. And the moment I see this girl, the Lord says, that one. What? Now, I'm not... There's a whole bunch of theology we can get into about this. I'm not too concerned about that. But needless to say, I would have never talked to the pretty girl that walked in the door if it wasn't for the fact that, because I was leaving the next day and like there was lots of people there, and I would have never gone out of my way to talk to her except for that thing I felt like the Lord said. I was like, what was that? And so I walked up and we had this great conversation, but I never saw her again. Left. A year later goes by. I still cannot go on a date because I am like, I feel this sense of like burden that I am not allowed to date anyone because of this weird thing that happened this one time. I'm like, I don't know what to do with that. So I say, God, a year later goes by and my brother is getting married. And I tell the Lord, I say, God, if that really was you, I don't know what to do with that. But if that was actually you, you've got to make that girl be at this wedding with my brother. Where I'd find out sometime later is that this girl, her name's Lindsay, she's now my wife. Yeah, sorry, spoiler alert. But this girl was not close friends with my brother. There's people, if you ever get married someday, you'll make a master list of everybody that you know. This is what happened with, you know, Carrie and Christine we got Zach and Casey getting married, all these guys, they're making these lists, right, of all these people that are like, okay, this is everybody we know, and then they kind of filter down, like, who you actually can invite based on, like, you know, the venue and how many people you can have and all that. So Lindsay was never supposed to get an invitation. She was on this master list of everybody they knew from their church, but she was never supposed to get an invitation. My sister-in-law's mother got the master list thinking it was the filtered list, sent out one batch of invitations, and she got an invitation. She thought it was cool, but she wasn't going to go because she had a good friend getting married that same day. So the wedding date gets closer, and she suddenly finds that the wedding is last minute canceled because the girl that was friends with my wife, her dad was a missionary and in this foreign country, and he went to prison last minute for like 2 weeks. He got thrown in prison. I feel like I need to go find that guy and apologize someday for my prayer. But he gets thrown in prison, and so this wedding gets delayed for 2 weeks. And so Lindsay's like, well, I protected this weekend to go to this wedding, but it's not happening, so I guess I can go to this other one. I was kind of surprised I got an invitation. And she showed up there, right? And one thing led to another, and here we are, three kids, 11 years later, and it's awesome. But sometimes the Lord will lead you into like, hey, you trust me, and you may not it may not make any sense to you in the moment. Little did I know, I never told her that till we got engaged, what was going on. She never told me until we got engaged that she had a calling to do campus ministry, but the Lord was saying, you can't do that yet. Turns out we come together, and here we are. CSU's campus. But sometimes you got to find the Lord call you to do things that you're not sure why, but do you trust him? So here's Peter, and he drops down the net because Jesus says to do it, and he's like, I don't really know what's going on. Verse 6, he says, when they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. Now that's quite a few fish. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man. You know, a lot of times people think, you know, if you don't have much history with the Lord, you oftentimes people think coming to Jesus is like becoming friends with Mr. Rogers. Right, like, you guys watch the old show. I know it's kind of old now, but Mr. Rogers, how many grew up watching Mr. Rogers? A few of you, not many. Yeah, you do. You do. Yeah, you're a little bit, right? It was, but if you know the kind of the cultural history, he was just this nice guy. He was friendly, and he did this like kind of puppet show for kids, and it was just, he was just this kindly, gentle, nice guy. He was the epitome of a nice guy when I was a kid. And we think that's kind of like Jesus. We think coming to Jesus is kind of like that. But actually, if you read the Bible, coming near to God and coming near to Jesus particularly, it's actually far more traumatic than we realize. It's actually, the closer you get to God, the more he repels and attracts you at the same time. And so there's this moment, this might be a little heavy for the first night. Welcome to CSU and all that, I don't know. But there's this guy, is Rudolf Otto. He was famous in the early 1900s for writing this book called The Knowledge of the Holy, or The Idea of the Holy, excuse me. And he was kind of this atheist, kind of, but he was this like philosopher of religion. And he wrote this book, and he talked about, there's this strange thing that seems to happen, and just from his observation, that whenever people have an encounter with the divine, that you know, you read the Old Testament, you read the Christian, you know, narrative, and throughout church history, you see these people, when they encounter God, there's this strange compulsion that they both feel, this profound repulsion and this deep longing and drive to draw near at the same time. And he says it this way, he calls it the creature consciousness, or the creature feeling, is the emotion of a creature, being us, submerged and overwhelmed by its own nothingness, in contrast to that which is supreme above all creatures. And so he's kind of saying, hey, there's this idea in recognizing our own nothingness, the person is moved to acknowledge the power and majesty of the divine. And he kind of develops this idea of the contrast of, actually, it's almost like we feel like we taint his holiness somehow. It's kind of like if you ever see a mall go up when there was a marshland, we kind of feel like, man, we've just somehow destroyed the beauty of the nature in that place, right, in our presence. And there's this repulsion that sometimes can happen. When we draw near to God, we suddenly realize how different we are from him. See, it's easy to think we're good when humanity is our standards that we base ourselves by. Because if I'm good, if I look at the people around me and I'm like, yeah, I'm better than you, and better than you, and yeah, I can, you know, what, we'll see. But you know, we have, if we compare ourselves to humanity, we can kind of think that so easily, so often. Sometimes people love history because if you just study history, you're like, man, there's so many people that are so screwed up throughout history. I feel pretty good about myself by the end of studying, you know, a lot of historical characters and their flaws and all that. If humanity is our standards, then yeah, we're doing pretty good. But all of a sudden, we come in the presence of God and we suddenly realize, wait a second, this is the standard. And we intuitively come to the realization that the creator in front of us, in front of the creature that we are, and we see the contrast between the two, and we suddenly realize, oh. It's what Isaiah in chapter 6 of his book in the Old Testament, this prophet, he comes to the presence of God, and he basically says, I am undone, woe is me. It's like I am unraveling, because I'm a man of unclean lips, not people of unclean. And there's this feeling in Peter right here. I was reading Revelation chapter 1. Jesus comes before John, who's actually here in this story too. And actually, I've been in the island of Patmos. It was like the greatest Devo of my life. Was like, I'm on the island of Patmos. This is where John wrote the Revelation letter. And I'm in the cave. There's like one main cave. And so everybody pretty sure that's where John was, and I'm in this cave sitting here reading Revelation 1, where he says, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. Then he placed his right hand on me and said, do not be afraid, I am the first and the last. And so all of a sudden, like even John, who's like friends with Jesus, lives out 3 years with Jesus in the presence of who he really is, still he's like, he falls down like he's dead. Jesus has to like comfort him and bring him. Hey, but have we had an understanding of kind of who we are? Do we understand the contrast between who we are as a creature and our creator? Verse 9, for he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people. So what's interesting is that Jesus continues to like, he's constantly saying, hey, don't be afraid. He says that to John in Revelation. He says that to Peter here. He says, hey, don't be afraid. At some point, you have to choose how you respond to Jesus. Am I going to ignore Jesus? Am I afraid of God? Am I interested? Am I curious? Am I engaging? I have to choose what I do with Jesus in my life. But Jesus begins to speak this future with Peter. He says, hey, I want to be close to you. I know you're starting to see a little bit of the difference here. And there's a lot more even behind that that you don't see yet. But I came here so I could be close to you. And so he speaks this future. Hey, I want to have a relationship with you. I want to be a partner with you. I want to pursue things. You know, we often say people draw closer to each other side by side. And Jesus is like, hey, I want to have mission in life. I want to partner with what I'm doing here in the world. I want you to be a part of it. I want you to help me in it. Would you join me in the mission of God in the world? So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. And so the second thing that we see is, yeah, Jesus kind of repulses Peter. Peter suddenly is like, I don't know what's going on here with you, but you are something very different than me. And I'm not holy. I'm not a holy man. I'm not, you know, I've screwed things up. And so Peter's first reaction is to get away. But his second reaction is that Jesus is trying to pull him near. And so he gives up everything. He just had like the biggest catch probably of his whole career. He just leaves it on the shore and goes, follows Jesus. He doesn't even care about the fish, doesn't care about his boat, doesn't care about the family business. He just wants to be near this guy. And so the second thing, Otto, going back to the idea of the Holy, says, he calls this the alluring quality. And it's, at its most intense, this fascination becomes exuberant and transforms into the mystical moment or direct, complete contact with what he calls the numinous. And what he's basically saying is that there is this common reaction in humanity that when we come into the presence of God, there is this like reaction. It's really interesting. He wasn't even necessarily a believer, but he was like, man, if you just look at history, there is this common thing where it's just consuming, overwhelming, almost inescapable longing to draw near. After the repulsion is this deep longing to draw close. First human response is to be undone, to run. It's too much. Then God's response is to elevate us, to say, hey, I want relationship with you. Don't be afraid. You might be further from me than you realize. What the early church called sin, this Christian term called sin, but the early church would use this word in the Latin that was the idea of somebody shooting a bow. We got Cable, he's got like 50 bows, right? Like I kind of like shooting bows for fun, just go to target practice. But the word for sin was this idea of missing the mark. If you're shooting at a target and you missed the mark, that difference was what they called sin. And so all of a sudden, there is this realization of who we are in contrast to God. It's this, and we're missing the mark. If humanity is the mark, maybe we can hit that. But when God is the mark, man, he's so much other, so much better, so much purer. And yet he's saying, hey, don't be afraid of me. I want a future with you. I want to transform the destiny that you have. And so before, what you care about, though, may change after you follow God. Peter, he catches all these fish. That's what he cared about. That's what his career was. That's what his job. And all of a sudden, everything changes before Jesus. You begin to see your priorities different, your values different. Who you are becomes different in many ways. Jesus would call it a new creation. He's like, I'm actually going to recreate so many things within you that it's going to be a whole new thing. And you're in college. All you guys are in college. And you're in this phase of your life where you have to decide, hey, who are you going to be? And what are your values? What is your life going to be about? What are the convictions of your heart? Who are you going to be? And particularly, maybe not who are you going to be if you suddenly realize God is creator. So who did he make me to be? And what am I going to do with Jesus? Am I going to flee from him in the recognition that I want to do my own thing and I'm not sure I'm comfortable with what his agenda is in my life and I'd rather just kind of, or am I attracted? Am I drawn in? Have I come to this place of realizing the incredible value he's offering into my life, the incredibleness of who he is and the ability for us to actually know our creator in a divinely inspired way that he came so that we could know who God is? Are we running from that? But you will have to decide in college, what are you doing with Jesus? I remember my psychology professor in college said, the person you are when you come to college, it's largely going to change. The person you are when you leave college, it's mostly going to stay the same. That this is the time in your life where you're so heavily creating convictions and values and who you're going to be. The rest of your life, you may contextualize that, deepen that. And it's not that things don't grow and shrink and all that. But for the most part, so much of your destiny is going to be directed here in these short years. I think it's interesting, Peter, he goes into this journey following after this rabbi. His life will forever change. So much so that actually there's this parallel story. It's actually the last story about Peter and Jesus that we have we see this in John chapter 21. And there, I want you to see if you can catch how many parallels are between these two stories and where the contrast is. Verse 3, John 21 says, I'm going out to fish, Peter says. Context is Jesus has died. There's all these accounts of him rising from the dead. They're not really sure what to do with that. Like, what are we supposed to do? So Peter just goes back to what he knows. I'm going to go fishing. And they said, we'll go with you. So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw out your net on the right side of the boat. You familiar? And you will find some. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved, that was, almost everybody agrees, that was John, said to Peter, it is the Lord. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat. So, here's these guys, they catch nothing, they fish all night. Jesus says, hey, drop your nets. And all of a sudden they get this huge catch. And it gets actually even bigger if you look at the larger context. Actually, right before this, Peter has just denied Jesus. He thinks he's a guy who really loves Jesus. But in following after Jesus, there are things that God is going to bring to light that's like, hey, there's more here. There's more things that are keeping you in distance and separation from me. You think you love me, but actually you're more self-centered than you realize. Peter's like, no, I would die for you. Jesus is like, no, you really wouldn't. And he actually denies Jesus. And yet, here's Peter. After this, Jesus actually still elevates Peter back up. This first story, Jesus says, hey, come follow me. And in this passage, if you keep reading the story there from John chapter 21, Jesus says that basically again to Peter. He says, hey, go feed my sheep. Go feed my sheep. You haven't lost relationship with me. Yeah, you screwed up, but there's so much grace. There's so much redemption. There's so much future. Keep following. Let's keep going on mission together. But the one big difference, can you catch the big difference? And I didn't read the whole passage, so you may not have quite caught what was happening. Peter doesn't jump out of the boat to get away from Jesus. Peter jumps out of the boat because he can't stand to be away from Jesus another second. He swims straight to him. His first interaction with Jesus, everything else is like a parallel story. Everything else is basically the same general narrative, except for this. And one, Peter's like, I want to get away. Get away. I do not want to be near you. You are freaking me out, man. And the other one, he's like, who cares about these fish? I'm out of here. And he jumps in and he swims to shore just to be near to Jesus. And so tonight, we need to stop running from Jesus to start jumping out of the boat. We need to start jumping out of the boat of our lives, the things that are our comforts and our conveniences, in college as we start a new year, a new semester, some of you guys starting a whole college career, what are you going to be about and what is your life going to be about and what are you choosing for it? What fears or loves in life pull you out of your place of comfort? What are the things that pull you out of your comfort zone? Or what keeps you in your comfort zone because there are not enough passions in your life to push you outside of it? When following Jesus becomes the core of your life, what can other people do to you? What anxieties, what fears, what trepidations can hold you down? He's like, I've got Jesus. And here's Peter. He did the worst thing he probably could have ever done. He denied his God in the moment of his God's maybe greatest need, as far as we know in the history of God, that like, hey, I'm going to die for the sins of humanity. Maybe I could just use a little encouragement from a friend. Instead, I get even my closest friends rejecting me. And Peter did like this horrible thing, and yet Jesus is like, hey, I still love you, man. I'm still with you. I'm still walking with you. And so what can other people do? If your life so becomes about him, about finding your validation in him, finding your value in your life and your truth and the reality that you see through the lens of what is real in following after your God, what can anybody do to that? You're bulletproof. Nothing can deviate from that. Nothing can take anything away. There's the fear of loss in the world shrinks because in that presence, there is nothing that can be lost in the value of your walk with your God. All you have to do is jump out of the boat and go be near him. So a couple thoughts here, and we'll land the plane here. Have you had a revelation of who you are compared to Jesus? You know you have because you have both been repulsed in some ways by your shortcomings, but love him more as a result. The Bible says those who have been forgiven much love much. Jesus talking. And have you realized how much he's forgiven you to draw near to him? Have you had a revelation of how much he loved you and how much he's done for you and how much he had to do to draw you into the place of being able to come close to him? Have you had a revelation of Jesus and who you are to him? You know you have if God... Oh, that's one. Are you more like Peter in Luke 5 or in John 21? Which one are you more like? Am I a Christian going to college or a college student who happens to be a Christian? Which one more defines you? I remember a close friend of mine who now is my boss. He wasn't my boss when we were first becoming friends. He now is, but he talks about when he first came to college, the first time he ever felt like he heard the voice of the Lord in his life was in his first biology class in college. And the professor said, who believes in the creator as the author of life? And he just did not put his hand up. He was too embarrassed or too scared to. And the Lord spoke to him. He says in this moment, he says, Scott, you are a weenie Christian. And he's like, who wants that to be the first thing you've ever heard from the Lord? Like, right? Like, you know, he's like, Scott, you are so scared of everything that everyone else thinks about you. You don't care nearly enough about me. But are you a Christian who happens to be going to college? This is the context, or is it the other way around? Have you had a revelation of Jesus and who you are to him? You know you have if God has both repulsed and drawn you in. You know, God freaks people out. But isn't that the way that like he should be? If he was really the creator of the universe, even shouldn't he be able to like, and this is, boy, I'm kind of poking the bear in a lot of ways right now, but just if he was God, do you really think that you are the standard of all morality and truth in the world? Do you think in 100 years people aren't going to look at you the same way that we look at people 100 years ago, is how backwards they were and how outdated and antiquated and how cute at best and just ridiculous at worst we see their sense of morality? Do you think that you are the standard that all human history will be based upon is right here, right now? If that's not true, if you don't think that's true, then wouldn't it be more accurate to think that a divine being far superior than us would be different than us, would see things differently, would have a sense of understanding and morality and truth and goodness and love that would surpass us and transcend us and even divide us sometimes from what we think? Wouldn't that be what we would expect? That sometimes God is going to call us to say, hey, I see things different than you. It's okay. I want to walk with you. Let's journey together because I want to invite you into a place of relationship with me. I think ultimately God is, we see that he says that he ultimately is wanting this deep connection with you. That you could say like, well, you know, if God was just, I'm just going to deal with God someday. You could do that if we had a God that just like was a creator and moved on and had other things going on. But if you believe that Jesus actually was the Son of God, came so that we could know him in a personal relationship sort of way, then you can't just say, oh, I'll deal with God someday. Because to say, I'll deal with him someday is a rejection. You are denying him in your life. Because he's saying, hey, I want to have a relationship with you. You can't, girls, you can't, you know, avoid the boy that, hey, is like wanting, like intimidated, but kind of like awkwardly, like, hey, what's your name? Me. You know, it's like, you can't just be like, ignore and not reject. The ignoring is a rejection. And when God is saying, hey, I love you, I want to be near you, and you say, no, not now. Or you say, really? Really? And journeying together. Most of the time, people come more into that place of saying, I don't think I'm in either any of those places. I don't know who God is. I don't know if I care who God is. I don't really know how to even understand. I don't think I've had a revelation of what you call my sin. I don't think I've had a revelation of God's goodness. I just don't know anything. And I'm not sure I should care or why I should care. And I'll just say this, if you're in that place, and that's common right now, you're in that place, I'll just say two things. One, are you in a place where you can push yourself into community with those who do have that relationship with God? That's one way to come to that place of revelation of who God is. Are you pushing into that place with people that are pursuing after Jesus? Or is that, maybe that's looking like spending time with that small group leader who keeps trying to hang out with you, or maybe that's like prioritizing time to spend time in the, you know, outpost on Wednesday night or what have you. But like, whatever it is, like, are you pushing into community with those? Because I can tell you, show me your community in the next month, maybe this semester, and I will largely be able to show you your destiny. Because you're going to be defined in many ways by the community that you live with and hang out with and spend time with. You're going to begin to see the world through their eyes and through the lens that they have. And is it through the eyes of your creator or is it through the eyes of other people with other ideas? Show me your community, I'll show you your destiny. And so are you putting yourself in a place to come to this place of knowing your creator? The other thing is, I would say, like, are you spending time? You're a student, you study who God is and what he's revealed about himself. Do you study those who have had these revelations of God, like Peter, like John, like Isaiah? Have you spent time in the revelation of your God? Have you read scripture and have you studied the Bible? Have you actually opened it up to know the revelation of what he said about who he is and what it means for your life? And so as we start this semester, I would encourage you to be a student of who is this Jesus. And if you know who he is, growing in that place of relationship with him in deeper ways. Not looking to the things of the world to satisfy, but drawing close to your creator. The worship team can come up, and we're going to do one last song here tonight. We'll have a few announcements before we wrap everything up. But I just want to like give us that thought tonight as we move into the semester. What are you going to do with Jesus? And are you saying, away from me, I just don't want to deal with you, I don't want you, I reject you, I just can't deal with you right now? Or am I saying, I'm jumping out of the boat, I don't care the cost, I don't care what I've done, I just want to be near you? Are you someone who's saying, hey, I'm drawing near to discover, to learn, to grow? Because if God is God, if Jesus was God, if that's all true, then he is the most important question that I can answer in my college career, because everything else comes out of that. And have I spent the time to actually journey with those who claim a relationship with him? Have I studied those who have claimed through history to have known him? Have I spent time in the way that I've studied and as a student and as a college person, like recognizing that, like, hey, I need to have a revelation of who God is and who he says I am? Because I want to know, what does it mean to be human? And what does it mean to have the good life in college? So many are like, I'll deal with that someday. I want to live the good life, which I can tell you it's not really life, and it's certainly not good the way the world defines it. But God says, hey, I want to have a relationship with you, and I can define for you what does it mean to actually have life and life to the fullest. But it's going to be in me and in the relationship that I'm inviting you to, and it's going to change who you are. Peter, at the end of his life, starts out, I want nothing to do with you. I just want to get away from you. Even in the middle of his life with Jesus, rejects him. But you know, at the end of his life, is so bold. Shortly after this story, he would stand in front of thousands of people that had, many of them who had crucified Jesus, and he would profess his faith to them. And he would then go off to become a minister of the gospel. And at the end of his life, so bold, so uncaring about whatever happened to him that they said, we're going to kill you. He said, oh, okay, yeah, Jesus said somebody was going to do that someday. And they're like, we're going to crucify you. He said, well, why don't you do it upside down? I just don't deserve to die the same way my Lord did. Man, that's a guy who went from so much fear, so much anxiety in his life to so much boldness. Why? Because he would pursue after the God and found his peace and his rest and his love through the eyes of his Creator. And we invite you to join with us this semester. There's a lot of great ministries, a lot of great community here. But if you are looking for a place, that's why we say we're a ministry of small groups, not just a ministry with small groups, because it's at that place where we can be known and to know other people, to journey together, to do life together, but in the pursuit of like, hey, who is Jesus and what does that mean for my life? Because I realize if he is God, then every other question becomes a filter from that first one. God, I just want to draw near to you. Let's worship here for just a moment tonight, would you?